Welcome to Podcastville. The Church of What's Happening Now is brought to you by Hims. Listen to me, and listen straight to me. 66% of men lose their hair by the age of 35. The thing is, when you start to notice hair loss, it's too late. It's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair you've lost. Now, I want you to go to 4hims.com because it's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and sexual wellness for men, if you know what I'm talking about. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss without having to break the bank. Well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. FDA-approved solutions backed by science. No waiting room, no awkward personal doctor visit, none of that stuff. So do me a favor. Order now. The church family gets a trial month of Hims for just $5. You heard that? $5! Right now, while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost hundreds of dollars if you went to a doctor or a pharmacy. Go to Hims.com/Joey, J-O-E-Y. Hims.com/Joey, J-O-E-Y. The church is also brought to you by Onnit. Listen, you know me, when it comes to supplements, I ain't blowing smoke up your ass. I go first class all the way with reefer, whatever we're doing, edibles, whatever, stomach, whatever we're doing. So when it comes to Onnit, they don't play games. Why? Because they got Alpha Brain. 100% money back guarantee that you get the product back. They don't want the product. They give you the money back if they don't, if it don't work for you. Who else gives you that type of deal? Nobody. Go to Onnit.com and press in.
Church.
And get your party started. Get 10% off delivered right to your house. All right? Kick this fucking mule, Lee. Take your time. What the fuck? It's Wednesday the 22nd, you bad motherfuckers. Uncle Joey here with my main man, Steve Renazzisi. The Christ Kill on the drums. And a little Aerosmith, a little heroin music for you on a Wednesday. That's a good fucking jam. Steve Renazzisi in the house, part two of our little conversation we're having about books and shit. But by the way, I saw a show that's coming out called Authors.
Oh, yeah.
Where they just do a take on authors, which I think is interesting, too. There's so many great podcast ideas that I'd love to do. Mm-hmm. I just don't have the time.
Of course.
Like just one with authors, you know? Like, yep. Just get like three fucking houses to either have the authors call in and talk about their writing experiences. Because that's always fucked with me.
I've interviewed a couple authors or two authors on my podcast and just their styles and talking about what they, you know, one grew up in Brooklyn, this guy Reed Coleman, and just went to a public school, got dropped off, latchkey kid, just started reading. Crime novels was his thing. And then he just started, like in college, started writing shorter and shorter crime novels. And then that's what he wants to do. And he's actually the guy that's going to write the prequel to Heat. I think it's Heat, right? And he's doing... They're doing a prequel or something like that to Heat.
That's crazy.
Crazy.
That's crazy that they would do a prequel to Heat when Heat was just a ripoff of Thief.
I didn't see Thief.
Nobody has. Nobody has because it won the Cannes Film Festival 1980. It's a movie with James Caan, Belushi's brother, Nelson, and Tuesday Weld.
Really?
Oh, 1980. It's one of the greatest fucking movies. You know, if you watch The Godfather... The regular Godfather that comes on. It's a great, James Caan is great.
Mm-hmm.
But if you watch the one when they put those old pieces back in, James Caan ain't that really good. Now, you're talking to somebody who's a James Caan fan.
Okay.
And I'm telling you that some of those scenes he did, you'll watch him and go, ooh, who is his acting teacher? These scenes are terrible. But what they got him in, The Godfather, when he's at the table, telling him that, you know, you joined the army and all that shit, you're going to hurt your dad on all that is brilliant. But Thief... He just hit it out of the park.
I got to check this thing out.
So that was one of Michael Mann's first movies. So Michael Mann made Thief and the prequel to Silence of the Lambs called Search of the Green Dragon or something like that.
Okay.
And Hannibal Lecter was completely different.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that. Okay. Hold on. Yeah,
That movie was Michael Peterson. Michael Peterson went on to do a movie called To Live and Die in L.A.
It's Red Dragon.
Red Dragon.
Red Dragon. So if you look at the Hannibal Lecter in there, you're like, who the fuck is that? As a matter of fact, this is crazy because last night, Silence of the Lambs was on and Hannibal was on afterward. And I remember thinking to myself, this guy is so good at this role. Like, he hit it out of the fucking park. I mean, the second one, when he fucking takes the guy and puts him out in the building and takes his guts out with the fucking knife and his guts come out into the fucking La Plaza del Sol or whatever the fuck it is. He's brilliant.
Yeah.
He's fucking brilliant as a killer.
Yeah, and it done wrong. It's just gross. It's just.
And I read that book in prison.
Really?
Like, I read that book word for word, and I see that movie, and it's the exact book. There's nothing. They shot that. Whoever executive produced that, they cut a deal. And whoever the author was, he said, if you move it around or fuck it up, you're done.
Wow.
This has to be, it's done just like the fucking book. They don't miss nothing. There's nothing added. You know, when you read Donnie Brasco, there's a whole chapter about what he did in Milwaukee with the central mob, the people who live in Milwaukee.
Okay.
They're into vending machines. There's a whole, you know, when you read Goodfellas is really about...
When you read Henry Hill's book, you mean?
Yeah. When you read whatever it's called, Wise Guy.
Yep.
When you read Wise Guy, it talks about how Henry Hill got really in. That they took out of the book of the movie his son, Paulie. So he was friends with Paulie since he was a kid. You follow me? The same way I was friends with Anthony Balzano when he was a kid.
Got it.
So whatever Anthony got, Joey got.
Yeah.
Because that's how they were raised. So if Paulie got a job in a beach house in the summer,
then
he took Henry Hill with him.
Yep.
That's how Henry Hill got in with the Varios. They don't tell you that in the book. They tell you in the movie, they tell you a complete different story. But in the movie, I mean, in the book, they talk about them being busboys in an exclusive bar on Long Island.
I wonder if that's done, if there's versions of the script that are like, that have all that stuff still in it.
I have a version of Goodfellas script. And it's similar to the movie. It's one of the revisions. Somebody just gave it to me as a gift in Toronto. There was a store that the guy sold scripts with signatures on them and shit. This one signed. I don't know who the fuck. I don't know if it's
today. Did you read it? Is it similar to the shooting script or the one they shot or not?
No, there's a couple of things that are out of place. It's so weird how.
Okay.
Because they make adjustments as they shoot a movie. A lot of people don't know that. You know, when I first got analyzed that, they were shooting that in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not kidding you guys. This is how much... That's why when you guys read about a movie and they go, oh, well, it made $800 million. And then you go to Box Office Mojo.
And you see how much it cost.
And you see how much that film cost to make. And you go, wow. Now, if that film is $180 million, guys, I'm going to tell you something at home. $60 million of that is pure waste.
Yep.
It's a write-off, guys. It's an investment for the movie company. That's why they have to turn that movie around so quickly. That's why it's very rare that a movie company, if we put a lot of money into a movie, that movie's coming out, whether it sucks.
It's coming out.
You know, they'll run it through different, what do you call those, focus groups?
Yeah.
And get a rating or kind of feel for it. I don't even think they're running them through focus groups anymore. They're so fucking bad.
Well, when movies cost a lot of money, they're coming out on big days where they want people to go see movies. When you see a movie that costs a lot of money that they're burying at different times, like that are not popular, you can tell those are the ones they probably don't have to believe in.
How many movies are making money? Look what happened this last weekend. How many movies are really making money anymore? It's the Marvel movies or the fucking comic books. The Black Panther movie killed it this year.
Yep. Or it's the guys like Seth Rogen who are doing like $15 to $20 million movies that are making $60 to $70 million or now $100, you know? So now what you're doing is you have guys that were like Seth Rogen made a couple of movies for $15 million, like the Dictator movie or whatever that was, and they probably made about $50. Now he has a budget of like 25 or 30 because those movies are making 100 or 120 now. Like the Neighborhood Watch and those other movies that he's producing and directing and stuff. So he's got a formula where if you don't ask for too much up front, you know you've got a fan base that's going to build, that's going to make you. Now, it's not going, the big exceptions are like Get Out, you know, like Jordan Peele's movie that you make for, you know, $4 million and then it makes $250 million and gets nominated for an Oscar. I mean, that guy should, he should be able to make whatever he wants for the rest of his life, because think about how, you know, how much money he made. The original investment, $8 million, I think the shooting budget was.
Well,
$8 million.
Well, listen.
And it made, it's probably $250 million.
We've all fucking been or been part of movies or whatever where, I've been in a $100 day movie.
Yeah.
You go to get something to eat, there's a fucking apple and cheese chips, those chips with cheese in the middle, processed chips, the six pack.
Yeah.
That's it. I've been on those movies, guys.
I know.
$100 a day, I've been on those movies. Then I've been on movies where there's lobster tails on Friday.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Mall Cop, we were like had Segways to drive around whenever we wanted to. Those little fucking, the Mall Cop Segways. You want to go to the other end of the mall? Take a Segway. Here's a jacket. Keep it. Don't worry. There's a Nintendo in your fucking hotel room.
You know, and that's what people don't really get, that you don't really need $60 million to make a movie. The studio gives you that, and you could chop it up in ways. So
that's the thing, though.
But you have to spend it.
Yes.
See, that's the thing.
But do you have to? That's what I'm... the point is, I think they're saying is, like, do you have to spend it? Do you have to buy everyone jackets and Nintendos? Instead, you just go, look, instead of getting that shit, we got a tighter budget. We're going to work a little harder for a little shorter. But instead of that, we don't have as much pressure to make as much money. You know what I'm saying? The mall cops that have that extra budget, and even for the budget.
You did the first mall cop.
Yeah, the first one. Which, and the budget wasn't even that much money. None of that.
It was a fucking home run.
It was $20, $24 million. Dollars, and they released made 100
in January. Oh,
on
my God.
Martin Luther King weekend, which has now turned into a great weekend.
Great weekend.
Yes.
He fucked it up with mall cop.
Huge.
And it's funny because I still remember shooting Spider-Man and walking on Sony lot and walking to my room and let's say it was Studio 6. My room was fucking a half mile walk. You know, I was a nobody. Mm-hmm. Put me out there. It was a nice room.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll never forget walking and seeing Sussman and going, what are you doing here? And I'm like, I'm shooting Spider-Man. He's like, get the fuck out of here. I go, what are you doing here? He goes, I'm trying to get Kevin James a film career.
Yeah.
He was a TV star. And then he got him Hitch.
Yep.
And I'll never forget that. I went out to dinner with Rogan and him one night. And I go, hey, bro. I give props and props to do. Remember when I bumped into you in the Spider-Man set? He goes, yeah, what were we talking about? And he goes, Kevin James getting a movie. I go, you got him in Hitch.
Yeah.
You got him in fucking a movie with Will Smith. That would have launched him for fucking, and then he did Mall Cop.
And then he did Mall Cop, his own thing.
And that was it. And that was it.
And yeah, I mean, that just, he's so likable in that movie. It just took off huge numbers. I mean, that made a lot of money. But then the other movie I did, Eddie Murphy movie, it's called Imagine That. The shooting budget, $92 million. It's made 16? 16? 17? You could look it up. I think it's 17. That, I mean, think about that L for Paramount. Think about that L. That's a big L.
But here's what people don't understand, that you have all these L's, but all you need is three home runs.
Well,
$700 million.
Eddie Murphy's got, well, yeah, I know. I mean,
so
he's got a track record of, you know, but you take an L like that and a couple of those.
He took a couple of those.
Norbit.
Dracula, Norbit. He took a couple beatings there for a while.
Yeah. There's a whole crew of us that were all in those movies. We were all thrilled to work with Eddie Murphy. And he was, they never, you know, he was never really there.
What was the name of the movie?
Imagine That. I think it made $17 million. It's $90 million.
The movie business is fucking... The entertainment
It was 10 years ago.
Well, I mean...
It's rough, Jack.
If you're not Eddie Murphy, like, if you guys are acting in a movie, do you see more money if they sell a lot of tickets?
What do you mean? I'll say that again.
Like, do you make more money if they sell a lot of tickets?
Who
like,
makes
like
more
you
money?
You or Joey? Like, yeah, and like...
Yes. For Mall Cop, I get residual checks... movies that are successful, but especially worldwide.
Is that from TV or like when they play it on TV and DVD sales, or is that ticket sales?
Everything. DVD sales.
Everything.
That's internet now. That's when they play it on HBO and everything. Shit.
Because like Mike, what I was thinking was is like if they took away all those perks for you, you know the studio is making millions and millions. Do you really care if would you really be like, okay, yeah, I'll give up all that food and I'll give up the Nintendo because I want to make it like $500 more.
Well, here's the deal. You will if you know you're making a good movie. But if you're a guy that just gets $25 million a check and it's just like, well, what's the next script coming through? And you just do it like it's a crappy movie like we did, like Eddie Murphy. Well, how many times are they going to, they're not going to give you $25 million anymore to do those movies.
Oh, they might. Because it's a fucking write-off when it's easy.
They have
a certain amount of money to make a certain amount of movies.
But I think they'd rather give 12 kids $2 million to make a movie that might just blow up than Eddie Murphy 25 to be in anything.
They don't think that way.
I don't know.
You've been here for 20 years. You've seen it.
Yeah.
They don't think that way.
I'm optimistic that he can figure something out.
People, listen, we're all in the car. I'm always in the car. I love to hear stories about a guy that put together a movie for $3 million, he had to fucking co-sign his mother's and grandmother's house. I shot a movie called You Got Nothing. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
This motherfucker sold the script. Sold the script, movie, somebody attached, the whole thing. He wanted to play Sylvester Stallone. His girlfriend signed with somebody's manager, Faye Dunaway's manager, hip-pocketed her. So what did he do? This guy had done 7 episodes of NYPD Blue where he had a line or less. Guess what he did?
What?
Like, they came to him. I'm not kidding you guys. They came to... This is 2003. This is the first movie I ever did that was more than one day.
Mm-hmm.
This was the first movie I ever did that had more than one scene. And this is the first movie I ever did where they put you on a plane. And we shot in Sacramento, and I didn't have to shoot for 2 days, and I got a grandma ball at a bar and a VFW. I went in there and had a drink. And right, I was in there 2 minutes, and some chick came up. I got blowing speed. Give me a fucking grandma Coke. I was supposed to go to rehearsal. I never showed because it was one line. I told him I had the flu. Just if you watch this movie, dog, you're like, Joey, who gave you that orange shirt? I couldn't even use the scenes in my reel. Do you understand me? These guys had the movie sold. This was a home run. They had like 3 people attached, Paramount. But the guy just couldn't let it. Like, fuck it. No. I'm going to have my parents fucking put up they remortgaged. That's when remortgages were huge. They had her parents remortgage.
Refinance.
His father refinanced. Both of them refinanced their houses in Beverly Hills.
Leverage to the tits.
I'll never forget the one guy had a wig. Oh, my God.
Murray's wigs don't fall off.
And the one guy that I knew from the movie was the guy that played the sidekick in... Okay. I hate this shit.
Sidekick and what?
I brought some girls to meet you. Where would you bring? Regular bimbos? No, they're not bimbos. They're bimbettes.
Oh, bachelor party?
No. The one with the kid from that he used to date a girl in my hometown and fucking Matt Dillon. Matt Dillon, 1984. Hector Elizondo. And about a kid who in the summer. He goes up to the fucking...
The Flamingo Kid?
The Flamingo Kid.
Yes.
Oh, my God. He was in the Flamingo Kid. So when I went to the audition, I recognized him.
Shit, all right.
I love the Flamingo Kid.
Yep, that's all it takes is one other person that you recognize.
Oh, my God, I was like...
This is legit.
This is legit. So I took this movie. I'll never forget the fucking costume lady. He goes, what'd you bring? Ralphie May had given me a shirt. It was orange. One of his shirts, like a 5X that didn't fit him no more,
mm-hmm.
that somebody gave to him. I was like a 4X at the time. Coked up to the gills. You know who was in that movie, too? Look it up. You Got Nothing. And give me the names. There was a guy in that movie that was married to the chick from NYPD Blue. That the one that was married to Jimmy Smits on the show, the brunette.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so this...
she was really beautiful.
You're Jillian, the second...
Jillian...
person on the cast.
Oh, yeah, they had to move me up. Who's number one?
Greg Lindsay.
Okay, who's number...
Val Lauren.
Go ahead, keep.
The rest is alphabetical.
Keep reading.
Philip Angelotti, Benjamin Carpenter, Joe Cortez.
Okay, Joe Cortez.
Joe Cortez.
Cortez, whatever you say.
Listen to Joe Cortez's story, guys. You're going to die about this one.
That sounds familiar.
This guy was a big... He's still around.
Joe Cortez?
Still around. About 70. Looks good. Goes in for a few roles from time to time.
Oh, he looks real good. Oh, my goodness.
But Joe Cortez was this fucking dude that in the 80s was just a woman killer in this town.
Oh, really?
And the story goes, he was Miami Vice.
He got it?
He was the original Don Johnson. He was the original.
Look, yeah.
Who's he with as an agency?
I don't have problems.
Oh, I should have logged into mine.
Oh, he died. Did he die? No, he's still alive.
Yeah, he's still alive.
He was Patterson, New Jersey.
Yeah, Joe Cortez.
He does look good.
Had a tremendous career in this town.
72 acting.
American History X, was he in that?
Yeah.
Joe Cortez, bro, was a bad motherfucker. But Joe Cortez was the original Don Johnson. And Don Johnson did walk into that audition on a Friday.
I nailed it. Is that what happened? Is that the story?
It. Yeah, it's like you got it. Steve Run is easy. You're the guy.
And then Don Johnson walks in last minute.
Go see just go see this guy. Don Johnson at the time was hanging out like with fucking Frank Zappa. Don Johnson was like a gold. Don Johnson was hanging out with either Leonard Skinner or the Allman Brothers. If somebody doesn't, in fact, one of those bands say that he co-wrote a song. Like Don Johnson was like a fucking actor in this town that was just a good looking guy, but he was fucking tearing up. He was married to Melanie Griffin. I think he married Melanie Griffin's mother. Don Johnson has an interesting story. Yeah. He did some pippy something. He's fucking nuts, Don Johnson.
Really?
But Don Johnson walked into that thing on a Friday and got it. And the rest was fucking history. Joe Cortez, that's his, it's like that dude that he turned down Friends. And he looks like a dick.
Who turned down
Friends? There's an actor that's out there. He was in the movie with Gina Davis in 1995, what Gina Davis did with the black dude. Who's the black dude that does all the Spike Lee movies, the DJ?
Oh, Wesley Snipes?
The DJ and Do the Right Thing. Come on, guys. He does the credit card commercials now. He's huge now. Who's the biggest black actor?
The president from
24.
No. By the way, Philip, Joe Cortez, all those guys, we did that movie, You Got Nothing. And I mean...
Did it make any money?
It didn't do anything.
Nothing?
Nothing.
A lot of those movies don't.
It was such a shame because while we were doing it, they kept talking about their lives and their money and the investment they had, and they weren't trying to spend. They really... We're keeping the budget low. I mean, I wasn't a nice hotel or something. It was like a Motel 6 in Sacramento. I was really excited. I had like 8 days on the movie.
Yeah.
So it was great. I knew I got the movie when I walked in there, you know. It was the first time I ever shot like that. And then like a week later, I got the Rodney movie.
Oh, which one?
They were at the Comedy Store.
Oh, yeah.
I got an audition. Like I just finished that. And I got an audition at right across the street. It's down the block from the Comedy Store
on Sunset,
heading towards the strip club.
Strip club on
across from that bar. So there's that Mexican bar on the corner. When you come up that street and make a left, and then there's the train where you get the hot dogs from the chili
Carney's,
dogs,
yeah.
Carney's.
Yeah,
up the block from there used to be a big time casting director.
Okay,
she was old and she'd throw you out of the office if you weren't prepared. Like the first time I got an audition with her, they were like, "Listen. This lady is fucking 60,000 years old, and she doesn't even like you bringing the sides in.
You got to be off book?
Off book, from the pre-read. In those days, there was a pre-read.
Yeah. So you got to go to the casting director first before she puts her neck out there for you.
So she would go to the pre-read, and then you would fucking do this, and then it was six hoops. And I remember I went for the pre-read. Mm-hmm. When I walked in, Rodney was in there.
At the pre-read?
Listen to me. Rodney was in there. Who's the guy that runs the Laugh Factory?
Jamie?
No, in Vegas. He was the director.
Garrett? No.
No.
Who runs that?
The Laugh Factory is...
I don't know who runs...
I just spoke to him about a week ago, 2 weeks ago. Great guy. He put me in that movie.
Really?
He was a director. He had done two movies with Rodney as a director. And fucking, I walked in, and I had just seen him and a bunch of other, those producers were walking around the store. I didn't know anything about anything.
Did you see anyone else you knew in the waiting room, like the other people auditioning? Like, because usually that's like, there's other comedians that are like, just like, oh, we're all going in this fucking thing together.
No, I don't remember. There were, the only other comedians in the movie were Harlan Williams,
mm-hmm.
Paul Rodriguez, the guy with the big ears that's a drunk, that's still around. I forget what his name is. Couple fucking annoying comics, but no. There was no comics in the store that were like my, no. I went in there like, that was the first time. It's a movie about the prison. And I was one of the guys in the prison that we went out and we ran and we robbed the hardware store at night. So we had jacuzzis and shit. Bro, I had scenes with that chick, the Scientologist.
Leah Remini?
No. The one that did the movie with Travolta. I had fucking scenes with the dude from Vacation. The guy's brother. I mean, that movie had some.
Oh, yeah. Fucked,
Back by Midnight?
Back by Midnight. Who's in that cast?
Harry Basil is the director.
Harry Basil.
Oh.
Who's in the movie?
Randy Quaid, Kirstie Alley.
Kirstie Alley.
Phil Lamar, Paul Rodriguez, Harlan Williams. Marty Balavsky? I don't know if you know him.
Marty Balavsky,
yes.
He was going to be the next big fucking thing. He was skinny and
shit.
Oh,
my God.
He was a Laugh Factory guy. He was supposed to be a star.
Like Marty Balavsky.
Marty Balavsky.
Wow.
His headshot's still black and white, so I don't think it worked out.
Yeah. No, I haven't seen him around.
Tony Cox,
little black midget.
Yeah.
From the little black midget from fucking the movie you like. I'm going to see part two with Johnny Rocky and his girlfriend.
Oh, Bad Santa.
Bad Santa.
Bad Santa, yeah,
he's
yeah,
the Tony
yeah.
Cox, the little black midget.
Oh, dude, he's hilarious.
He's hilarious. Dog. I mean, we had a blast on that movie. Kirstie Alley was eating. She had to be tipping the scales at 350.
Oh, it's big.
And I'm tipping the scales at 350.
Oh, Gilbert Gottfried was in
it. We were eating like animals on that fucking set. It was tremendous. And I didn't listen. They hired me, but there was no character.
Oh, really?
In the script. Like, it was up to Rodney every day. It wasn't as easy.
Did he just put you in scenes and stuff, and you just like...
He liked me so much at the audition that he's like, just bring him down. Yeah. We'll find something for him.
Yeah.
So they called me JoJo. He called me JoJo.
That's amazing.
Now, this is like fucking... This guy was everything to me at the time. I had to do everything I had to do to keep cool in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything I had to do. Like, when I watched the Young Comedian special with Bill Hicks and Kenison and all those guys that he's hosting, they're hilarious. But he was fucking hilarious in between. I still remember going to see Easy Money with beers in the movie theater, sneaking beers. And as soon as the movie started, all you heard was beers opening up the whole... Like, I still remember being excited for Easy Money 2 weeks out.
I was nervous meeting my girlfriend at the time, now my wife's father. And I remember when I walked in, a couple times I met him, but the first time I really bonded, we sat down, we watched Back to School, and we laughed at the same time, it's impossible not to laugh.
It was
at
the first
guy.
Movie he showed me. Like, when we first started going to his house, he, like, pulled me down, he had it on his DVR.
Which one?
Back to School.
Easy Money.
No, the one with he's a photographer.
Oh, Easy Money.
Easy Money. I'm sorry.
It's hysterical.
Because it's funny on so many different levels.
It's fucking just...
Visually, it's a funny... He's a funny human being to look at.
I don't lose my mind. Like, I saw Eddie Murphy at the store. I didn't lose my mind. Paul Mooney, I didn't lose my mind. There was a lot of people at the store when I first got there. But here I am in a Rodney movie. And they would go knock on this trailer and see what he wants to do to you. And I would walk in there and he'd have a robe on. He was naked under the robe and shit, smoking weed and the fucking thing. And I'm like, he doesn't have an idea that if he told me to suck his dick right now, I'd Harvey him. Like, that's how much I idolized Rodney. Like, just, he was a part.
Yeah.
Done. Like, he was who I was. So for 6 days, I just got to watch this old Rodney. But I didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
He was old. He couldn't remember his lines, guys. He would come out just to do his lines, you know, like they would yell the lines. So they would say, he was old.
Yeah.
It just wasn't him. He was just doing movies for the check for his pension now.
Well, he didn't start till he was 50.
But he was still smoking dope and drinking and walking around with a robe barefoot. Like, he was just a fucking legend. And, like, I talked to him a few times. Like, we would talk about the scenes and shit. JoJo, man, this is what we're going to do here. Take your shirt off. Let me show you. Look, you know, like there's one scene where I'm 400 pounds. And I'm just sitting there with no shirt on in a fucking prison chair looking around.
Oh, look at this guy. Huh?
The movie is god awful.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I mean, when we went to the fucking thing, that was no, like I was telling Lee, next week, Memorial Day, Labor Day, whatever.
Labor Day.
I'm going to do a podcast with Lee, and I wrote down, I did the Abe Lincoln clothes, and I wrote down, since I got out of the prison, the good things that I did and the bad things that I did. And I got to tell you, it's like my good accomplishments and my bad accomplishments. And it's like your bad accomplishments are triple your good accomplishments, but you just did a couple good things. Like I keep looking at this list and going, that was a good move.
Yep.
Like, that was a good move. Like, that was instinct, you know? Like, now I'm looking at what made me do those moves, and I look at the other moves, and it's just straight-up drug mistakes. Drug and stupidity. Drug and just being 20.
Yeah.
And being 30 and being immature. You make these I got out of prison at 25 years old. And you know, I had been through from 16. It didn't end. Like, it just didn't end. Prison was like the first time that things slowed down. Like, whew, I know where I'm going to get an apple from tomorrow. Like, that was the first time. So when I got out of there...
Did you need it, you think?
Did I need prison at that time? It was either going to happen then or now. But somewhere, it was going to come down.
Mm-hmm.
And it was either going to be a... I think that I did a mistake, and I got a short sentence, and I went on with my life. But in those 30 years, I just wanted to crown a lot. You know, like, got married, blew the divorce. You know, after I knocked my wife up, like, I was falling apart, like most men do.
Mm-hmm.
When you knock a woman up, those 9 months are fucking emotional for a man. We keep it together, like, I'm having a child.
Yeah.
But, dude, I'm so excited. His name is Lucifer. But deep down inside, you're breaking inside. You're like, what if I slip? I can't slip no
more. There's no more fucking up. The net's gone.
There's no more fucking up. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, every punch I throw has to connect.
Yep.
And that's what life...
And you got to pull some, too.
It's weird how life throws those... Like, you guys... I went to the break. I went to pee. And you're like, hey, I don't know when I'm ready to have a kid. I've said this once. I said this a thousand times. You're never ready to have a kid.
No.
You're never ready to get that big movie.
Nope.
You're never ready to get that big call from a producer to do that big comedy show. But you step up, and you cover the spread, and you walk out and go, whew.
Yeah. Well, and we figured it out.
They didn't let me see. They didn't see me sweat. That's the most important thing. Like, I look at that list, and I go, oh, my God. I mean.
I don't know how I did that.
I was howling. But the moves that were good were thought out. I know that they were calculated. Like the stand-up. What makes you get on stage the first time? Pure fucking stupidity, alcohol, and bravado.
Yep.
You don't know why you get on stage the first time. You have no idea. You have no idea. Like, I threw this poor bastard up on stage in Chicago during my special. He did great. And he never talked about it again. It was an experience. It was such a rush. Oh my God! People know my name. It's. When did you get on stage?
For me?
Yeah. Like, dumbest thing we ever did.
It was a dare. I'm like, I don't really want to do it. My girlfriend was like, yeah, I'm going to sign you up tonight, drunk. I'm like, all right, let's do it. Get on stage. Tell 3 minutes of jokes.
Had terrible. People told you you were funny before?
Kinda, yeah. But I feel like you're either. There's only a certain amount of people that would ever take the risk of doing that and embarrassing themselves. That's a small amount. And then out of that amount, anyone that's willing to do it, that's ever willing to do it again or multiple times, that's even smaller. So I think it weeds out real fucking quickly. Real quickly. The people that are like never meant to do it. But whoever's drawn to that microphone for whatever reason, mostly it's just... for me, it was like... some sort of false bravado, thinking that I'm a funny person, that I could do it, and a little bit of alcohol. That's it. And going back is because I felt okay, and I didn't, something about being on stage was like, oh, I'm this isn't the worst feeling in the world. I kind of, at some level, enjoy this.
While you're saying this, I'm thinking about how much I really want to hate my wife and how much I like to stab her and how much I like to do a lot of bad things to my ex-wife. But she did what she had to do, and I can't be mad at her for that. But she did do one thing. She fucking, like, I kept calling up Comedy Works and canceling.
Oh, really?
And she would. Like, and then one day I told her I got a spot, and she got a babysitter. So she put me against the wall.
Yep.
I go down there, and we went and got dinner. It was like a date night.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down there with her, and I fucking got on stage. And when I got off, the owner of the Comedy Works is there, Ed Nichols, at the time. And he's like, keep doing it. You got stage presence and shit. And I remember, like, walking up the stairs of Comedy Works going, like, how am I going to keep doing this?
Yeah.
Like, I have a wife and a child. Like, what am I going to tell them? Like, I remember the next couple weeks at work, it was like, I hope this ladder falls. You know, like, because I was a roofer, and I would help them. I would estimate roofs. And I remember going, like, I wish this ladder falls, and I break my leg so I could get out of roofing. And while I'm rehabilitating, getting to stand-up comedy. Like,
so it's like, yeah.
Like, I didn't know how I was going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept getting on little stages, and I kept eating a bag of dicks. Then I went to New York for 10 days just strictly to do blow. Like, I hadn't been in New York for 6 years. I left in 85. It's 91. And I just basically went to New York to do blow and get on a few stages. And I went to a few places, and it was kind of scary, and I just did blow. I went up by Yankee Stadium every night and bought fucking... I rented a car from Hertz, and it was like a white police car. And every time I go to the Bronx, these black people would run away. And I'm like, no, I'm not the cops.
I got to buy a blow with a white police car.
Oh, my God. I was taking cash advances on this credit card. I went, oh, my God. Those cash
big percentages, too. Oh, on those bank you 18% at least on those things.
They hit you out. That's how they... First time you get a cash advance on a credit card, you're done.
Yeah.
Because it tags onto everything. The 18 tags onto everything.
Yeah, because the 100, they're not charging you $100 on your credit card. They're charging you 118, and then you don't pay that, and then the interest is on the 118 that you're going to pay.
I went bananas when I got divorced. I had like every credit card in the world, and I went through them like a fucking bandit. The worst thing I ever did was Discover. Like, I tried to reapply for Discover.
I got a fucking application
came back ripped up. Like, Mush's tickets and shit. It came back ripped up.
I got a Discover card in college.
Hit me.
And they gave you a t-shirt with it, like a long sleeve t-shirt. And I remember playing basketball that day, and I had to go to a class, and then I had to go do something later on. I was all sweaty, so I basically just wanted the fucking I wanted the long sleeve t-shirt. So I signed up. The card came in the mail $12,000 later. You know, they give these fucking cards to people. I don't know. $12,000, and about 6 years later, I finally pay this fucking card off. I still have this fucking t-shirt. It's got 1,000 holes in it, and my wife keeps trying to throw it away. You touched that. That was a $12,000 fucking t-shirt. I'm going to be buried in that fucking t-shirt. It's got Discover card on the front of it, 1,000 holes up the fucking sleeve and shit, holes everywhere, but I held on to that fucking t-shirt because it cost me $12,000.
Let me tell you something.
$12,000 bucks.
Guys.
I don't know if they still do that, but they had Discover, MasterCard, Diners Club, all in the fucking Union Hall of the college.
Of the college. Yeah. So that's how I got it.
Sign up.
That's how I got it. As soon as you get a loan. So when you go to that intro day.
Yeah.
It was that intro day.
They had huts.
I couldn't believe it. I was like a kid in a candy store. I was a thief.
I just wanted a fucking t-shirt.
Here I am with like AGs in my pocket. Some scholarship money from poor Latinos. They donated. I'm signing up for classes. I'm withdrawing. I'm banging out these checks. I'm a fucking animal.
Collecting wick.
Nobody knew nothing. Nobody knew nothing. Nope, not even my wife. I had money coming in from me. I had scholar. I had a friend. That's what he specialized in. You paid him $500, and all he did was get you scholarships. And he had lists of them. Five nickels. Oh, I was getting nickels. I was just banging them out like they were my money. Bang. Fucking. I was sorting eight ball a night. I get a nickel and save $2.50. Fuck that. Then I go get a jacket. Then I go to the movies. I go get a fucking one of those Chick-fil-A sandwiches. I eat three or four of those Chick-fil-A's in Boulder. You think I'm kidding you? But I'll never forget going to pick up a Pell Grant. Those 2G ones.
Yep.
They're free. And I was like, oh, I'm going to get some blow and all this shit. I go downstairs, and the visa girl came up to me. Hi, how are you? Did you get a Pell Grant? Yes, I did. You qualify. Well, really?
Sign me up.
Sign me up. I signed every one of those things. And a week later, all those cards came in the mail with a nickel. And let me tell you something. I didn't touch those fucking things. Didn't touch them. Didn't touch them. Got locked up, came out, didn't touch them. Every once in a while, I'd go to the... there was one card I would repay, but it would kill me. That's why I didn't gamble, because I don't like paying that motherfucker on Thursday. That's what happens with a credit card. You're out spending, drinking. I would go to, what's that place that gives you the bottomless fries?
Red Robin.
Red Robin and Bold. I had a Coco Loco that would fuck you up, like vodka and fucking Gazinga juice and ice cream. I got up to like 3,000 pounds drinking 10 of those a night and putting them on my credit card. And
16,000 grams of sugar.
Oh, my God.
Bottomless fries.
I used to spend there and at a place called The Harvest. I would get my credit card, and it would just be Harvest, 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 Harvest.
What's The Harvest?
Harvest was a vegan joint.
Oh, okay.
That I thought was just the tea had meth in it. The tea would make your hair stand up. Seriously, I wish I was lying. It was like a cinnamon tea. When they tried to switch it, because Celestial Seasonings is in Longmont, Colorado, the Boulder,
okay,
basically. So I guess they put Celestial Seasonings and the town got together and signed the petition for The Harvest to bring the tea back. This is 1987, 88, 89. I went in The Harvest every day from 1987 to about 1994.
Jesus.
For tea every day?
I went in there for tea, the Swiss granola, or the Australian pit chicken, or the vegan gazpacho. That's all I ate was The Harvest.
Mm.
I loved it. The breakfast was the best high-calorie breakfast you could eat. It was fruit, this fucking frozen vanilla yogurt.
That doesn't sound bad.
With blueberries, but a ton of granola, which kills you. It was called Swiss granola with two pieces of multigrain toast with butter. That's what I would eat for breakfast every day, heavy on the bananas and the blueberries. No kiwi, none of that shit. I would go in there and destroy those things. So for years, I kept my credit card use low. I didn't know, but when I got separated, what do I give a fuck? I started burning through those things like a motherfucker, but the last one was Discover. Discover I just took to the cleaners because they were done with me. But I got home coked that one, and I started looking through the drawers, and I found those Discover checks.
Discover checks?
Oh, yeah.
Whenever
you get a credit card, they also send you 3 blank checks.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Same thing as getting an advance. My buddy, his dad was a gambler, and they almost lost the house off those checks.
They'll give you those checks. You can put whatever you want. So I waited till that was a Saturday night, 10 o'clock.
Wow.
I fucking signed it for $1,000.
And it cleared?
And there was a Bank of Boulder, and I had like $300 in my... I don't even know. No, I couldn't have $300. I had no money in my bank account. And next thing I put it in the driving window, and usually the check would come back in the tube, and I opened it up, and it was $1,000 bills. I took that money and ran.
What's that feeling like?
But I had also taken a loan out from these people for the Acura. At the time, I had an Acura car, and I had my bank loan with them. So I guess they... But, bro, Monday, 9:05, my phone rang. Mr. Diaz, well, we have bad news for you. Discover declined that check. You better bring back that $1,000.
What?
I was like, $1,000. Me and some girl snorted that shit. That poor girl's on the bus ride home thinking to herself what happened. She was coming over to snort a line and go meet her girlfriend. She ended up sucking and fucking for 2 days in that basement of debt.
Oh, God.
And they were serious, bro. I never heard that. You have till 12 o'clock. I said, and I called the lady at the bank.
What do you mean you have to 12? What are you going to do?
12 o'clock, Discover's going to press charges. I said, okay. And I fucking called the lady I had the loan with, and I told her what happened. I go, it was a mistake, whatever. She goes, let me see what I can do. That fucking knucklehead calls me back, and she goes, what we're going to do is tack on the 1,000. We're going to pay Discover and tack the 1,000 onto your car loan. That's how fucking ballsy I was, man.
Whoa.
Oh, my God.
So one night, I'm taking the Acura. I'm going to a Nugget game. I get 2 tickets to see the Nuggets courtside, and I hit black ice, and I fucking bang out those Acura rims for $1,000 a piece. I bang out the fucking Acura rim. I got to drive home with a flat tire. You know me. I'm lazy. I don't know how to change the tire. I just drove home. I didn't give a fuck.
Oh, my God.
I'm making payments on this car. So Mike Kessler, the Wolf, that's been on the show, Uncle Mike, he was the general manager at the at the Acura place. I told him, listen, leave the keys in the car. I'm going to go over there one night and just take an Acura Integra, bring it in the house, take the tires off and switch rims. This is how crazy I was. Dog, I was out of my mind.
You did that?
Please, I can't cop to it because people will know.
I think you just copped to it.
No, I didn't say yes.
No, not necessarily.
Not necessarily. It's funny as shit.
Oh, my God.
And then there was a dealership up there, and I knew them. I used to go up there and sell them coke and shit, and I used to go up there at night, and I used to get Gouda cheese. I love Gouda cheese with crackers and freshly squeezed orange juice, and I would sit there at night and look at the Acuras. And one night, I go, let me see if the door's open. And the door was open, and I went in, and it was a Friday night, and I went into the dealership. This story's out, so I don't give a fuck. And I knew where the spiff box was, where they have the cash for Saturdays, like if you sell the most cards. And I clipped the bag. It was like $300-$400. The next day, they blamed this guy named David Means, who lived in Florida. I mean, he was a thief and a coke fiend. There was a bunch of coke fiends who worked at the Subaru. It was a slash Subaru Acura dealership. Oh, my God. I got high on the Acura side, and I was fresh out of prison. And I had a big chip on my shoulder, dog. I was out of control.
Really?
Oh, I was out of control when I was in the halfway house, dog. I was itching for a fucking... And the guy's name was Jeff Jensen. I stormed up, nicest white guy in the business. And my first 3 days there, I sold 3 cars. I had already made like $3,000. And Acura used to have a car called the Vigor. and the finance guy was black, and he drove a Vigor, so they used to call him the nigga with the Vigor. You can't write this shit. You understand me? I mean,
yeah, they
this is only in Boulder because they were racist people.
Yeah.
So Acura used to have a car in 1988. Look it up.
Who invented the nickname, though?
Somebody at the dealership.
At the dealership. Yeah, sure you got to have a nickname.
It was fucking hilarious. So one day I found out something. They were going to revoke my probation or something. So Jeff Jensen was one of those guys that was just the night, you know, like the guy from Zany's Nashville.
Oh, Dorf, yeah, Ron or Dorfman.
The nicest guy in the world. Yeah. Like Dorfman is the nicest guy in the world.
It was only sold in America from 91 to 94.
See, it was called the Vigor. And there wasn't a black person in a 90-mile radius.
That bought that Vigor?
No, that there wasn't a person in a 90-mile radius, a black person. And the one black person, they hired him to be the finance manager at the Acura store. And then they gave him a Vigor. So the white dudes would sit there that were racist. And they'd go, look at that fucking Vigor with the nigga. Over the nigga with the Vigor. And I would just sit there and go, this is only in Boulder. Because they are racist fucking. Those, you know, that's why they had all the problems with the football players and shit like that.
We do 8,000 podcasts. The last 2 podcasts we said that were like 18 times.
No, because it's true. It's not a racist word. I'm not using it in a racist term at all.
Well, you're just repeating it with what... Yeah,
no. I'm just repeating what they were saying. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
why would they make that? Obviously, what did the car look like? Do you have a
not
picture?
Not great. Yeah.
I mean,
it was a smaller whatever. It was a smaller version of the fucking car that put them on the map.
Oh, the... What's the car that put him on the map?
Well, they just look so old now.
That 4-door, whatever that was.
Oh, yeah. That looks like a Datsun almost.
Yeah.
See? Integra? Acura? What was it? The Acura?
I had a 2-door Acura Integra. I used to call it the ACT. White little Integra with the fucking... It was tremendous. It had the best fucking stereo system in the world. I bought it from my brother, Jim Wheeler.
Vigor.
For fucking book.
Oh, really?
For book, and then we got like 11.5 from the bank. We chopped up a nickel a piece. You know us, dog. Always wheeling, fucking dealing. Because he gave it to me for book, but it was worth more. The stereo, they had paid the kid like $8,000 for the car. He told me, if you just put 5 over on the thing, I'll sell you the car right now through the bank. So that's what I did. It was
perfect.
Great deal.
And they paid off the $1,000, too?
Ben, no. When I left Colorado, I just left that car on the corner. I just left it on the corner and prayed for the best.
What do you mean you just left it on the corner?
Dog, I had no insurance.
Yeah, so.
I hadn't made a payment and fucking, I used to hide the car under bushes. Every night I had to hide. I had to hide the car three blocks away under fucking camouflage. And fucking...
So you parked your car at night three blocks
away? Oh, they were looking for me. They were looking for me.
You threw a tarp on it or whatever?
Oh, no. I would park in some guy's garage. I told him I had a problem. He would let me park in there, and he parked outside so the tow truck could knock the door down. I was going through hell. I was starting comedy.
Yeah.
I was in my second year comedy. All the money I was making was paying an attorney off to keep the wolves off me from my ex-wife. I was committed to comedy at that point. 93, I was like in. Like, that's it. This is what I want to do. So it was just a rough patch I had. It was just a really rough patch. And I just left the car there. And you know what? Years later, looking at my credit app, it ain't nothing there. So
it's crazy how that
shit. I had two cars dissolve into paperwork that I know I owed money on. I had a car in 83 that I bought off one of those buy here, pay here. Then the bank got involved and I left it on 143rd Street, 135th Street, in a snowstorm one day. I came back 3 days later. They picked it like a chicken bone.
Oh, it was just
paper. It was down to the frame on bricks. I never said nothing. I didn't call a cop. I just got on the plane to Colorado. And, dog, that thing still hasn't popped up on my credit app. I got, like, a perfect credit score now. And I got my Amex back, and I banged Amex for years. When I was going through that divorce, I would drive up to a casino because you can't get a cash advance from Amex. Unless you go to a casino in those days.
Oh, really? Why?
Because the fucking pit boss will call American Express himself and say, Steve Mazzizzi needs a nickel.
Wow.
Yeah. And then in the 90s, if your card had a $5,000 limit and you went to Las Vegas, you just call the pit boss over. A pit boss would up your fucking limit on a card. Did you know that?
No. I would go to Atlantic City.
Yeah.
But we'd have to play. We were under 21. So yes. We'd have to get our IDs chalked and stuff. So we just wanted to win cash. We weren't looking for big wins. Something that we didn't have to, like, go in and sign paperwork for. A couple $100. That's all we were looking for. But I didn't realize that you needed, like, if you needed to get a cash advance, you needed to talk to someone, a fucking pit boss or a dealer or someone like that, to get you a cash advance. Yeah. Fuck.
They get your cash advance. They call the card for you. Bump your limit and get your cash advance.
Damn.
That's how much strength they had, like, in the 90s, 80s, a fucking casino in Las Vegas.
Well, you can still do it now.
They would know somebody at the company. Like, let me talk to Miriam. Miriam, Joe over here at Caesars. Lee Syed here, nice guy, big player, been coming here for about 4 years. He's got $50,000 limit on his card. I went up to $75,000. Let me see what I could do. Yeah, okay.
And then you'd be able to go.
You heard they could still do that?
Oh, I know you can get an advance. I didn't know. It makes sense though, because the casino probably has a relationship, and they're probably like, "Oh, well, we'll cover the losses. Like, we'll just have him owe us." Like they probably like I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I destroyed. I mean,
it makes sense. They just want you gambling. Why are you spending money?
In my fourth year of comedy, I would get to a comedy club, and somebody would go, somebody just called here for you. Call this number. And I would go, that's HBO. That's an agent. And I'd call them back, and I was like, hey, Joey, Sam from fucking Discover.
Oh, fuck.
You have no idea how many places I would go to, and they'd call me.
You never had student loans or anything, did you? I mean, besides, like, they came after you for those Pels and shit like that, or?
No, they never came after those me are just for like the Pels. Yeah. They came after me about 7 years ago for the student loan.
Oh, they did? They found you?
Oh, yeah.
7 years ago?
Yeah.
Would they try to pop you? If you, I mean, you don't have to tell me, but
they had to pop me for
can I grab one of those, too?
A big fucking envelope.
Holy shit. 7 years ago. That's a while after, too. Fuck.
I skipped.
There's no statute of limitations on that?
No, not on student loans.
Student loans,
they will fucking hunt you down. Listen, if you die, your wife is responsible for your fucking student loan.
There was a big Vice article a year or two ago about people who are leaving the country and just never coming back, but they're not going to pay their student loans. Like, they'll get arrested if they ever come back to America.
Seriously? They don't fuck around. You get a letter. As soon as they see something, listen, I didn't pay taxes from 91 to 2000, like fucking three. My wife, God bless her, talked me into going to the IRS. And I've said it 1,000 times. They were the nicest people in the world. But I'm going to tell you guys something. You don't have to pay taxes.
Don't tell people that.
If you make 30 G's a year, or let's say you're a wheeler dealer and you're making cash, you don't have to pay taxes. But I'm going to tell you something. If you're making money, they know it. If you're making deposits and cashing checks, they know it. And they, in time, they'll come get you. They'll come get you when you make money. Trust what I'm telling you.
That's why
those years they told me that I wasn't responsible from 91 to 80. They only go back 7 years. Those years, it doesn't matter. I made no money. 1 year, I made money. The other fucking 7 years were $8,000 years. In 1996, I made $8,900. In 1995, I made like $9,000. One of those years, I made 72 because I made $60,000 in December working for a sports betting service. I made $12,000 one year, you know, delivering Chinese food, trying to just put angles together. But all those years, I was making $9,000.
Yeah, I made like $20,000 in 2002.
They don't give a fuck about $9,000. What are they going to do with $9,000? When you start making money, they will reach out and touch you. Remember that thing? Reach out and touch somebody? What was that? They'll reach out and touch you. They know exactly where you are, especially now. Especially today.
Yeah, now you can't go anywhere.
You know, when I was doing all this crazy shit, remember, we were still, you know, I was telling these guys a story the other day that I had a friend who used to, was I telling AJ or you about my buddy with the ATM cards?
Yeah, he would close accounts.
Yeah, who was I telling?
I think it was AJ.
He would fucking go into a bank, put $2,000 in, leave it there for 6 months and take a $2,000 bank loan on it, a book loan on it, on the $2,000. So he would take $2,000, and then in those days, the computer systems weren't fast enough. So Woodland Hills and Studio City, so he would walk into Studio City Bank of America at 259 and close the account.
And get the $2,000 back?
Get the $2,000 back, and then shoot up to Woodland Hills by 5 and close the account because the computers wouldn't move fast enough.
And then
they wouldn't process it. They caught him late. You know, they didn't catch him.
Yeah.
But now you can't do that. You know, over the years, you know, this, I had to do a background check 2 months ago for a passport. There's shit on there that's not even mine.
Really?
Oh, there's cocaine arrest. I never got arrested for cocaine. But how many Jose Diaz's are there?
Yeah.
Fuck.
You know, so there's how probably many Jose a lot Diaz's of shit.
Is on there? But let me
tell you. Funny you say that because my first American Express card, I got a new one. You know, the date comes up. I got a new one probably 5 years ago, and you get the. I looked at the number, whatever, and all of a sudden, I'm using it. And the guy's like, "Man, this it's crazy how old this card thinks you are." And on American Express, it says member since.
Yeah.
Mine said member since '88, and my dad has the exact same name as I am. And he was a member since 88. So the card they sent me was my card, but they had his name and they had member since 88. So now I'm a child trying to, you know, get it. So I sent it to them. I go, you guys, this is my card, right? This shit's not going to my dad's bill. He's like, no, we fucked up. We just, you know, we looked at the name and that was it. And I was like, oh shit. But yeah, I can imagine that Jose Diaz has many, many different citations against him.
But then the shit, like I did a ton of shit from 81 to 85. None of that is on there.
Well, that's good.
Like I don't start coming up in the computer. Like I had an arrest in Bergen County. That's not up there. But there was a couple of arrested with those arrested. If you don't get in trouble for 6 months, it gets clean. Taken off your record. I had like six of those. But there was a couple other ones that, you know, I know they should be on there. They're no way on there.
How close are you to getting it all taken care of?
Not close at all. I still got the warrant in Washington State. But it's a non-whatever warrant. They're not going to come get me, and I'm not going to surrender, so we're on a stalemate.
Yeah.
They just want money. They just want me to pay a fine. That's it. That's done. I think the Idaho warrant is null and void. I think Idaho finally gave up.
It's like we're done chasing Joey Diaz. Yeah,
we're done. It was a different time.
Yeah.
It was a different, something weird happened. I don't know if you guys read the paper. It's really fucked with me the last couple of days. And I'm going to talk about it, then we'll get the fuck out of here. I know you got things to do and people to see. This thing about Anthony Bourdain's girlfriend.
What about her? I haven't heard about this.
This is beautiful. She's one of the early accusers of Harvey Weinstein. but it just got released that she's getting sued.
She settled.
She settled for raping a 17-year-old kid on a set one night.
What? Her? She did?
Yeah. And you know, I told my wife, I go, what people don't really understand across the country is that Hollywood, let's start from scratch.
Wow.
What's that expression they say about women? There's no wrath in an angry woman.
Hell hath no fury like a scorned woman or something.
Scorned woman. Let me tell you something. There's a lot of men in Hollywood that are bitter, but think how many women there are that are fucking bitter. You know, there's a bunch of women that suck dick and got success, but there's a lot of them that suck dick and just got plain lied to. You know, I just bumped into a comic from 20 years ago, about 2 months ago, and it was great to see her and the whole thing. But she sucked her way out of this town.
Yeah.
You know, like you ever see somebody and you're friends with her and you never had nothing to do with her, but you just see her now and you're like, you sucked your way out of this town. You know, I went to prison. I did something wrong, Steve Renzisi.
Mm-hmm.
And I got locked up and I paid my due to society. And I got judged. You know, I had to get judged and all this shit. But at the same time, I have daughters and I have a wife and I have friends that have daughters and I understand the whole Me Too project. But you really have to think of the whole thing. And if there's smoke, there's fire. You know, before you fucking throw a rock, you better make sure you don't live in a glass fucking house.
I mean,
okay, that's number one.
The most painful interview I've seen so far is Matt Lauer when he's interviewing Bill O'Reilly. Just literally, like, you're the head of the network, you're the face of the network, you don't think these accusers have, and then for him to be a month later, it's like, how do you do that interview?
It's...
How do you do that interview knowing that, you know, it's got to come down the other way?
We live in a weird fucking town. We live in a weird, this is a weird business.
So this woman made a payout
Argento.
For this?
$380,000.
To the kid?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she's one of the early accusers.
Was he like drugged or something like that? Or was he just like, I was just 17?
He was on a set.
He was 17 in 2013.
Now, somebody should smack the fuck out of him.
Yeah.
He's got to be some Ugat's kid because, you know.
What's he doing there?
Argento sucked his dick off. Like, you could tell she got tattoos and she's nasty and, you know.
The age of consent in California is 18, so maybe that's why.
That's why.
Oh, really?
But yeah, right after she,
they did a movie together or something.
Yeah, but he went after her right after she started talking about Harvey Weinstein.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. You got to make sure your house is clean before you start pointing fingers.
That's why you got to check your fucking closet from time to time and rattle those bones. I always do and just look. And listen, man.
That's why, buddy, I don't get down when people, you know, they talk shit about the fucked up shit you do or I've done or whatever. It's like, fuck it, dude.
I don't give a fuck. You
I'm like, you have to know, like, your house is all fucking cleaned up. You've done all your homework. You're perfect. You know?
Okay, so the thing that gets me the most about this town is I was a criminal. I fucking used a gun. If you're going to do something like these guys don't use guns. They're like fucking little wormy fucking dudes, you know? And my point before was being is I've done a lot of fucked up shit. We were at the store when, dog, I seen a lot of bad shit at the store. I seen women get put through a lot of shit at the store.
Absolutely.
I seen women walk into situations at the store. I saw a lot of bad, crazy stuff at the store. You know, I raised my hand on some nights. There was some crazy shit that went on there. But I saw women get eaten up in this town. And, you try to pull them aside. You like them as a comic. And you're like, hey, man, don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck you. You don't know what you're talking about. And then they're gone. I saw women that try. I know a lot of female comics that used that power. But at the end, comedy always wins. At the end, if you can't be funny,
yeah,
those titties and that pussy and that all that shit goes away. And I saw it. I saw women do it. You know, I saw women go through it. You know, there was a girl at the store when I first got to the store. She would suck your dick for a spot in the belly room. Tell you. Yeah. Tell you.
Like, yeah.
I'll suck your dick for a spot in the belly. I'll be like, are you fucking crazy? I'll get you on stage at the belly.
Yeah.
Hold on 1 second. Don't go nowhere. Let me go talk to this chick. Yeah, real quick. You know, I mean, it was that crazy at the store.
Yeah.
So when you hear, when all this shit went on, I looked at it from a, you know, and I, Harvey Weinstein's a piece of shit in my book. You know,
of course,
I mean,
yeah.
But we all know he was doing that. Everybody knew. Everybody was in on it. They were all in on it. The agents knew. It was like a joke. How do we fuck around? When we're together, when, you know, when we're sitting there as men, three guys, you know, when three guys are sitting together by themselves, what do you think we're talking about? Fucking cars?
Yeah.
When three animals are sitting together, they're talking about their conquests. That's what they do. They talk about their conquest. Three classless fucking guys. Which,
sure.
There's a lot more classless guys in L.A. than classy guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, bro, I have people that suck my dick. I've never said nothing.
Oh,
I've never
course.
Said nothing. I've
yeah.
had people that say, oh, listen, I'm going to suck your dick, but don't say nobody could. And you're like, this is the best blowjob in the world. Like, if you say something, everybody will want one.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Don't say nothing. You know what? I won't say nothing. You're absolutely right. I know how to keep my macho. But there's guys that have to.
Tell
about
everyone.
That conquest. You didn't mean to tell me Harvey Weinstein never told guys, come here for a second, fuck him, Rosen, whatever her name is, sucks a tremendous pipe or whatever. They chit-chat.
There's plenty of people.
So they all knew. They all knew. You know, Harvey goes to a party, he sees a hot 20-year-old, who's her agent, come here for a second, send her into my office tomorrow. He knows. That agent knows exactly what's going down. You know, not one agent was mentioned that sent all these women. I would attack the agents. I would make the agents liable. Go, hey, man, you sent me to that fucking office and fucking Godzilla stuck it up my ass. You know, I mean, it's the truth, Lee. This ain't a joke.
I used to yell at my agent if they sent me to the wrong building. I used to call my, I'm like, can you guys get your shit together?
And but, then fucking, you know, I'm like, but then there's two sides to that story where it's easy. There's a lot of people who knew what they were walking into. This town is not, there's a lot of people who don't want to do the work in this fucking town. They don't want to do the fucking work. And I guarantee there's women that come out here going, I'll suck a dick. You tell me that that's not true? That's the truth.
No, I'm saying it is. I also think that some people think it's their only way. That you know, I'm not that good and this is the only way I'm going to be able
no,
to do it.
No, you're right. And you we know? Saw it. We saw it. I yeah. saw it at the store.
Yeah.
I remember one night coming back from the store with Lee and just telling him stories that I got to the point where my body was shaking. We were outside. It was warm weather. Just telling them comedy, you know, just shit that I'd forgotten about. That your mind gets exercised as you're talking,
mm-hmm. and you remember
about different
yeah.
sexual and crazy situations, and you know. And I'll tell you what, like I've never really been like a fucking. And I wanted to tell this story on the podcast. When I was 13, I hung out with the Cuban dudes, and they were animals. You know, Cuban dudes are animals.
Yeah.
The white dudes I hung out with were a little bit more classy, but the Cuban dudes like, yeah, I'm going to make out with him, grab her titties and shit. So I didn't really fucking know. You know, I didn't have a father to give me that guidance. So when I was at this girl's house, I knew. I grew up with, we all grew up with this girl. We all go to a house and we're at a house and we're watching like Saturday Night Live. Then there was this girl, another girl that came over that went to a Catholic school. We grew up with her, but I hadn't seen her in a while. And I was like, holy shit.
She looked good.
Oh, my God. And we had, I had known her since like maybe the third day I moved to North Bergen. I became friends with her and her brother. And her brother, I think, joined the army and got shot one night. He came back home on leave and got shot on a drug deal or something like that. But they lived in our neighborhood, but she went to a Catholic school. And I was a little fucking savage at the time. I didn't know nothing about nothing. I didn't know how to control, like, I didn't know anything. And she didn't have a bra on.
Oh, my God.
And she had, like, a shirt on.
Yeah.
And the tit was popping out. And I was like, I couldn't 13. Take it.
What are you going to do?
I couldn't fucking take it.
What'd you do?
And I just told her. I said, can we meet downstairs? And she's like, yeah. But she didn't know. She yeah. thought we were going to meet to smoke a joint. And we went downstairs, and I started smoking a joint with her. And I told her. I said, you know, I started giving her the typical lie shit. I've always had a crush on you. We started making out. And I remember I went for a tit, like the tit was out, and I like grabbed the tit, you know, mm-hmm. and she let me suck it for a couple minutes, and then afterwards she started crying. Like she was 13, dog. I was 13.
Yeah.
She put a tit back in her shirt. She's like, I can't believe that I let you do this. I feel terrible. And she started crying at first. I'm like, what are you doing? And I got mad for about 2 minutes. But for some reason, I saw the little girl in her. And that's when I discovered sexual harassment. That's my sexual harassment story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just seeing her cry because she had given me her tit the first time. This is the first time she had ever... Like, she just went out to experiment. She ran into a wolf.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yes. You know what I'm saying? She went out to experiment.
And you saw you still had enough innocence, I think, to see the sense in her and say to yourself, this girl is not, like, rejecting me. She's just scared right now. And she's not, like, saying, terrible. Like, it's you're an asshole. It's more like just, like, I'm in this uncomfortable situation that I, you know, didn't know I was getting myself into.
I didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know as a
That's
kid.
A great, I mean, well, look. That's a great lesson to get, especially and be able to lock into it at 13.
But she was my friend. You got to remember, she wasn't a girl at a bar.
So you weren't trying to hurt her. She
was my friend. No,
you knew you wanted to have like a cool relationship with her.
I thought she was sending me a message every time she bent over.
Mm-hmm.
And she even had like funnel tits. Like her tits weren't big developed yet. They were just
fall forward like a cone.
She was beautiful. She was a beautiful girl. She had grown up to be a beautiful fucking girl. You know, like she was 13. I was 13. But that was the first time I saw a girl get upset like that, and it bothered me, and I knew, like right there, I knew that that's it. Like, she didn't say no, she just pulled away because she was a Catholic fucking girl, and she's like, my brother's gonna find out, you know, my father, like, she was just ashamed. She went on to date some fucking tow truck dude, like, you know, years later, who had a filthy dick and shit. Fuck her. But moral of the story was, I learned something.
You learned, that's great.
I really did learn something from her. That was weird. And when I dated that girl in New York in the seventh grade, like, we used to just dry hump.
Oh, I dry hump
one time. I sucked her titties, and that's it. That made me get left back. Like, that's how weak I was at that age. Like, that I got left back from her just dry humping me. Like, I didn't. She told me I want to wait, and I would just take it.
Yeah,
you know, I would
take what you can get. I was just happy that people would dry hump with me. Fuck, dude.
Not doggy. Everybody keeps telling me you want to start this gambling podcast.
Oh, yeah. I'm starting. I'm going to do a dry run the end of the week. Just practice it.
Really?
Yeah. Here's the deal. Here's why. It's not just gambling to gamble. It's gambling because now that it's legal everywhere, it's sort of the taboos.
So tell me that it's legal. What is this
list
legal?
So now you can go into, it used to just be Vegas. You can get it at a sports book. That's when you want to gamble on the Emmys or the hot dog eating contest or a fucking baseball game. You can't just go to the OTB. You got to go to, like, you used to have to go just to Vegas. They were the only one with a sports book. Then Jersey had the big lawsuit, and now they won Supreme Court because the whole thing was you can't have a sports book and a professional sports team. So that's why Atlantic City couldn't have a sports book for all those years. So now that anyone can have a sports book, they're everywhere. So you can literally go down to your local sports book and gamble on anything, or you can do it online. That's another option. So my thing is this: it's not just going to be football, it's not just going to be sports, it's not just going to be baseball. It's going to be the week of the Emmys. I'm going to have someone come on. We're going to talk about the categories. We're going to see the odds, and we're going to gamble and bet on that. We'll talk about that for the week. We're going to have all these different bets building up, so that we're going to have payoffs and have to, like, you know, have either, it's not going to be monetary bets, but like shame bets and things like that. I'm going to bet, you know, baseball. Yankees, Red Sox, say they got a World Series game coming up, whatever. We'll do something like that. So it's going to be all arenas, politics, sports, anything. So it's not just gambling to gamble on money. But I do want to have some experts on because, like, baseball, I don't know how to bet baseball. There's 1,000 different ways. So I want to have on someone to talk about that. You know what I'm saying?
To explain to people how to bet baseball.
Yeah, how to bet baseball. How to bet, you know, how to bet golf. When you play golf, there's all these different games you can play. Wolf. Last man in, all these different things you can do. So have someone on to talk about the different games you can play like
that. What was the first thing you ever gambled on?
For me, blackjack.
For me, it was professionally. The football sheets. That's the first gamble.
What do you mean, like football sheets?
People give you sheets Tuesday.
Pick the teams?
You had to pick four for $10, for $1, five for $5, paid you like $13. That's the first time I learned, and then you had to pick college.
Besides, like, card games, like at the house. Like, my grandfathers and uncles would play card games and stuff.
I didn't like losing. I don't like paying on Thursdays. So that's what got me. Thank God. Like, I made a decision. If I'm going to pay a bookie, I might as well snort coke. That was my decision early.
Yeah.
In 83, I was like, wait a second. I can't gamble and snort coke. But I'll tell you what I will do. I won't gamble and snort coke. At least I'll get something out of it. I didn't like paying a bookie every fucking week. I always thought about doing a sports betting podcast. Mm-hmm. And I have a friend, a dear friend, that's his expertise.
Oh, yeah, really?
Danny Bianculo, that's his expertise. I mean, they did a segment on him on HBO. On Real Sports, 97. That's what I told Justin, our agent.
Oh, yeah?
I go, I should put, but Danny lives in Hoboken.
Well, we could Skype people
Danny
in.
Does his own thing.
Oh, he does, yeah.
But he's tight with the ref.
Oh, okay.
The ref did our show early on.
Okay.
And then he's tight with this other guy that has a sports betting thing out of Philly. Johnny, I follow him on Twitter. Good guy. Really good guy. But I'm in with all those guys. I just, for years, you know.
Donaghy for the ref.
Yeah, for okay. Donaghy and all those guys. For years, people asked, you know, because I do know. But I don't know. I don't know. Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. That's why.
Nobody knows.
That's what I was going to do. Like, people were like, oh, you should do a fantasy football podcast or whatever. And I'm like, the market's sort of saturated with that. But also, like, I used to go on those fantasy football expert podcasts and I used to sit there and like, nobody, the ball is shaped fucking crazy. It bounces weird. Nobody knows. The ball bounces this way. The ball bounces that way. You're right. You're right. Who's an expert? There's no fucking experts.
Listen, guys,
there's no one knows. I mean, there are dudes that do their homework. There are dudes that know who kick well in the fucking weather and which way this is going on. But nobody really knows. Now, because of the whole gambling thing, the NFL, one of the leagues, is the first one to sign. You can bet at the fucking stadium. That game.
Probably the Raiders.
Yeah. So you can now have, you can bet at the game on that fucking game that you're at right there. So now they have like NFL guys and you know, they have gambling guys in these fucking locker rooms. I'm just saying, before and long, there's a reason why all these spreads and all these numbers are so fucking close every single time.
They know, yeah.
Every single fucking time. These guys know. So, yeah, those guys are experts, the guys that could call the lines and stuff like that. But as far as like fantasy football and all that bullshit, that's not really, but the guys that really make the lines, it's like 7 or 8 dudes that know exactly what the fuck is going on.
And they trick you. But
I mean, if you're a casino, think about it. You got to find someone that's going to lay the odds for your casino to make sure you don't fucking lose money. I mean, there's probably 7 guys in the world.
Yeah, there's 7. No, but there's every casino that can do has that. Like a couple guys, and they see it coming. They fucking trick you. They're geniuses. Whoever sets the line
that's
is a genius. But remember, a wise man once told me, Art Schlitzer was a starting quarterback, and he lost. Pete Rose was playing the game,
yeah,
and he was a loser. And so was Michael Jordan, was betting the game,
yep,
and he was losing. What makes you think you could pick a fucking game? Once I heard that, I was like, you got me there.
I think it's, you got to have separation. Those guys have too much skin in the game. Jordan's too emotional. He doesn't want to lose. He doesn't. I think the 7 guys that know how to do it, they don't give a fuck. It's a math. It's either a gut feeling that they just believe their gut, and if they're wrong, that was a fluke thing, or that's some sort of math problem that they go, this is what the answer is. I don't give a fuck.
Hey, listen, I've been on the receiving side of the hook for years. The hook means, you know, the line says 7. When you call your local bookie, it's a 7.5 because more people are betting the Knicks than mm-hmm. they are the fucking...
So they move it over?
Detroit Pistons. So they move all this shit. Like, I know all about that local stuff. I used to do it myself. I used to have my coke dealer as a degenerate gambler. I had 3 coke dealers, but one of my coke dealers is a degenerate gambler. So I'd set them up during football season. I'd call them on Fridays and start telling them what to pick. And then I call him Sunday and go, I'm really liking this game. I knew it was going to lose.
Oh, God.
And then he would call me Sunday and go, can you get a better? And I would sit on it. And he would pay me with cocaine that night. I got to go pick up the money tonight. I'll just take coke from me. God damn it. How do you do it? I'd set him up on Thursday with what to bet. But I knew they were losers. And every week I was right. He bet against me or whatever.
Oh, my God. His
bets. I just knew it. That's how I got free coke on Sundays when I hosted the store. Jesus. On Sunday nights, that's how I got free coke. That was my Sunday night hook to set him up and shit. And I would even call him and go, you got a bookie? He would call me. You got a bookie? Yeah, let me call you right back. I'd set him up. Wait 5 minutes. I got like one guy. He said 7.5. but you got to bet 100. I would always keep him low and shit. Like, he would always go, how about 500? No, no, this guy, first time, $100.
Just in case he
won. Long cut.
Just in case I lost.
Yeah, yeah.
But he was the kiss of death. He couldn't pick a fucking
the one. Mush.
I just saw so many guys that now, if I like something overwhelming and I'm in Vegas, I'll bet it.
Mm-hmm.
But if not, I don't give a fuck.
I want to have someone to talk about podcasts.
Well, it was funny because
bet on who's going to have the most hits this week on their podcast.
That's,
you know,
a good one.
Whatever it is, it's like you can have a topic about any. It's like doesn't have to be sports at all. That's why I like it. It's just like people have opinions and they feel like they're like, no, fuck you, I know what I'm talking about. All right, then let's bet on it. You're wrong. You wear a bikini on the podcast next week. I'm wrong. I'll grow a fucking mustache for a month. Whatever. So
you
want to
pull like the Tripoli thing? Spit in my mouth.
Yeah, something. I mean, that maybe not get that filthy, but yeah, sort of like
they're fucking crazy. Yeah, with those guys, they come each other's ears and shit.
Well, you know, Ari and I got a long-standing one. It's almost a year old now. When the whole Louis thing happened, I told Ari that I'm like, that's it. It's going to be a while before we see him again. And this is October of 17, last year. And he goes, he'll be on stage by the end of the year. I go, are you out of your fucking mind? You think he's going to go on stage? I go, what comedy club is putting him on stage? I go, forget it if you want. I understand. I would have no problem with him going on stage. But what if the waitresses walk out? What if there's a protest out in front of the fucking thing? This is like right when it happened. No. I go, I understand. He should be allowed to. No. Fine. I go, he'll be on stage. We'll bet on when he's going to be on stage. So it ends up being by the end of this year, if he doesn't step on stage... We did the bag of bets on the podcast. So we reach in, and the thing we pulled out was the loser has to act in a 3-page gay porno that the winner writes. And there could be no fucking, but it's going to be pretty, you know, terrible. And Neil Brennan's going to direct it. And then we're going to put it up on...
So you got 4 months for him not to get on stage.
4 months, Joey.
He's been going to the Comedy Cellar.
No. He's been going, but he has not gotten on stage. He has to stay, not get on stage, December 31st, 2018. Oh. And then it's going to be terrible. I already have three different ideas for the 3-page arc I want Ari to go through on the porno.
But none of you nervous he's going to get on stage?
What?
Are you nervous that he's going to get on stage?
Well, I see, you know, you see articles like Adam Ebay sends me an article like, because he's my ears on the ground. I go, if Becky starts telling you like, start clearing, I go, you got to let me know first because I got to start preparing myself mentally. But so I have ears on the ground, but so does Ari. No one's more embedded in the New York comedy scene than Ari. So he'll know first. But as far as LA is concerned. And then I have like people talking to me like Fitzsimmons is like, well, I think he's going to start in Australia. There's a count. I go, yeah, stage. But he's like, I think over there he'll start there because it's a little bit looser. You know, his reputation perhaps over there might be a little bit better. So there's a whole like, where is it going to start? So
let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
How would you have handled the Louis thing?
I think
guess what? I would have got on stage the next night. I would have got on stage the next night.
All I can say is I was not in the same situation. I was in something somewhat similar. It took me a month.
I'll tell you something.
But I mean,
the first time you get on the fucking stage and face the horse is when you're done.
Yeah.
You have to face the horse. Now, my whole beef with this whole Me Too thing, this whole thing that how we'll wrap this up is when I went to court, I got accused, I got evidence pointed against me, and the evidence went against me. In today's world, you could just say something. And we're done. And I don't like that. I do not like that power. That see, the first time somebody says something, I got a blog up. I got 1,000 things coming up. I wouldn't just hide. I would say, yeah, this is what I did, but it was also 10 years ago. Does it fucking really matter now? If you don't think I changed in the last 10 years, then you don't know. Then you didn't change.
Mm-hmm.
We've all fucking changed.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 20, 10 years, you changed.
Of course.
So for you to hold somebody accountable like that to end his career, it's not fair. It's not fair to a man, especially after this fucking Argento thing. This is what I'm talking about. A couple months ago, they accused the Nerdist. You ever been around the Nerdist?
Yeah.
Does he look like he's a fucking animal to you? No. And I know that girl. I know her well. I knew did Spider-Man 2 with that girl.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. She was on the podcast. I've had her on the podcast. I knew when she was 14 years old. And when I read that thing, I didn't read that. You know why? Because hell has no scorn like an angry fucking woman, okay? And there's a lot of people that are walking around mad in this fucking town. There's a lot of people who are happy because they depended on their talent.
I had a big problem with it.
They depended on their talent.
Yep.
If you depend on your talent, then you don't have to do those creepy things. I've done 1,000 creepy things in my fucking time. But let me tell you something. When it comes to stand-up comedy, the reason why Rogan talks to me is because I don't fuck around. This is what we do. There's no shortcuts. There's no, well, he said this. There's never been that in my world. I know that the answer is getting on stage and working and writing. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else is background music. Well, if you go there and hang out there, if you go there, if you make out with this broad, I never believed that. I never bought none of those stories. And that's the fucking problem. That a lot of people come here and mistake that shit.
For work.
And then, guess what? You come and go.
Yeah.
You come and go. And you got to put yourself through that aggravation to do what? Sleep with some guy, suck some bad balls.
I know.
I look at my balls at night and I go, can you imagine making some 25-year-old girl suck these rotten fucking nuts to get in the movie?
No.
Like, after I read about Harvey, like, look at my dick. It looks like a fucking science project. Like, you look at my dick, it's got scars and holes in it from shit I used to put drugs in my dick to come back clean and shit and a Drano on my dick. It looks Santeria. Like a, oh my Come God, on. I got rashes from fucking jujitsu and shit down there. Can you imagine putting your nut in somebody's mouth and you acting in a movie and winning like an Oscar and walking around like you got, you know what I'm saying? Like,
I know.
And all those people who suck the dick, they're not around anymore. I guarantee you, they're not around.
Yeah.
They're not around. It's such a, talent is talent, man.
And it stands on its own.
It really does.
Yeah.
And all the fucking shortcutters, they're gone. All the shortcutters are gone. I tell Lee all the time, I've seen people come and go. I remember going to diners with these people and having a 3-hour ear beating on their plans on how they were going to be comics, and they just fall apart.
And none of them were to be funny. It was always like, I'll talk to this person.
Yeah, yeah, I'll talk to this person. I'm going to do this. Yeah. I'm going to read this book. I'm going to go to this club. I'm going to go to this premiere. Listen, funny is funny, and you got to work on it.
Mm-hmm.
With that, it's always a pleasure to have you on.
I love you,
What's
buddy.
The name of your podcast?
Hear Me This Book.
Hear Me This Book. And don't forget, he's back on it. You're back on it.
Back on it now.
Every week. No problems. Remember, Thursday sold out in fucking tomorrow sold out in Huntsville. Saturday sold out. All you got tickets left is for Friday night in Nashville. So I'll see you motherfuckers this week in Nashville. Where are you at next?
La Jolla Comedy Store last weekend in September.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit. Heading to La Jolla.
Oh, then, shit.
Then up to Edmonton the first weekend of October.
I'm doing La Jolla in December.
Oh, you are? I love that. I do it once a year now. It's so much fun.
No, you know what? Why not? We're Beautiful. Comedy Store guys. Oh. Why fuck around?
I love it.
Thank you for listening, guys. Don't forget, the church is brought to you by 4hymns.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness for men. Have you seen more forehead than ever before? Has someone mentioned that you have a bald spot that wasn't there before? Have you noticed a pile of hair in your brush or in your comb or in the bottom of your shower? Have you fixed your hair lately and just said, where has my hair gone? Listen, go to 4hymns.com right now. I'll tell you why. Why? Because there's no waiting room. There's no awkward person, doctor visits. You save hours by going to 4hymns.com. Answer a few quick questions. Upload some photos, and a doctor will prescribe you the prescription meds that you need, and they're shipped directly to your door. Hims will also help you with, you know, ED problems. Let's say you're going out on a Friday night. You're going to go have some parties, some drinks. Why take a chance? Go to Hims.com right now, and they'll help you out. It's a tremendous thing. Look, Lee's going bald. He knows.
I wish I had 4hymns.
I know. You wish you had 4hymns now when you need it. Me, I'm losing my hair. But guess what? I don't need it no more because I'm 55. What direction am I going? I'm going 6 feet under. But you guys, baldness could be optional thanks to science. So do me a favor, all right? One favor. Go to 4hymns.com right now. My listeners, the church family, will get a trial month of hymns for $5. Joey, $5 today, right now while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost you hundreds if you went to a doctor or a pharmacy. Uncle Joey's going to take care of you. You're going to go to 4hymns.com/Joey, J-O-E-Y. That's 4hymns.com, F-O-R-H-I-M-S.com/Joey. Again, 4hymns.com/Joey. Don't have hair loss and no more ED. You understand me? You know why? Because Uncle Joey's taking care of you. Number two, on it. Listen, from the Shroom Tech Sport to the Shroom Tech Immune to that Mexican chocolate whey protein that is just delicious. Onnit is always there to cover the spread. Alpha Brain, 100% money back guarantee if you don't like the product. Who does that in this day and age? They got kettlebells. They got weighted vests. They got a bunch of stuff. I can't cover you there. As far as supplements are concerned, you get 10% off from Uncle Joey. Go to Onnit and on the checkout press.
Church.
Boom. And get 10% delivered right to your house. All right. I want to thank Steve Renazzisi. I want to thank the Jew. Don't forget Nashville Friday night. That's all we tickets we got left this weekend. That's it and that's that. I love you motherfuckers. Stay black. Have a great weekend. We'll be back Monday morning ready to fucking rock. Kick this fucking Mule Lee.
The diner on the corner. I am waiting at the counter for the man to pour the coffee, and he fills it only halfway. And before I even argue, he is looking out the window at somebody coming in. It's always nice to see you, says the man behind the counter to the woman who has come in. She is shaking her umbrella, and I look the other way as they are kissing their hellos, and I'm pretending not to see them, and instead I pour the milk. There's a story of an actor who had died while he was drinking. It was no one I had heard of. And I'm turning to the horoscope and looking for the funnies when I'm feeling someone watching me. And so I raise my head. Inside, does she see me? No, she does not really see me, cause she sees her own reflection. And I'm trying not to notice that she's hitching up her skirt, and while she's straightening her stockings, her hair has gotten wet. The bell.